How's it going, man?
So good. We're back in the cave.
I know.
We're back in the kung fu cave closet thingamabobber. Doodad dilly.
We're up here. It's this is going to be our first one for this year.
Yeah.
Here anyway. So yeah, it's good to see you in
Likewise. Person,
all live and direct. So yeah, what are we going to do for our housekeeping?
Well, let's tell everybody who we are. We are Kung Fu Conversations. You can find us on Instagram under KF Conversations. You can find us on Facebook. You can get a hold of us through Instagram or Facebook. I'm your guy that's running those. We also have a YouTube page for our shows, and then we also are available on any platform for your listening pleasure. Also, the good news, we have a new t-shirt shop.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, you can find us over at KF Conversations at Fourth Wall, or even better, I have a direct link on the Instagram, and later down the road we'll get it up on our YouTube and on our Spotify page. So yeah, check out the t-shirts. We went with a different company this time. I like the t-shirts a little bit better. We've also got some posters and a pretty cool truck driver's hat.
Hell yeah.
So yeah, check us out over there. Help support us there. You can also find us at Buy Me a Coffee to help support the show. And that is under Kung Fu Con Pod. That's Kung Fu Con Pod. And we also have our little schools of our own where we teach and train in Kung Fu. How about yourself, sir? What is your school?
Yeah, my school is Boulder Internal Arts in Boulder, Colorado.
And you're teaching?
Bhagwan Shingi.
The best. And then I am Randall Davis here in Longmont, Colorado with Red Force Chinese Boxing. And I will be teaching the Wong Q lineage of Wing Chun. And some good news, we'll give more detail in it for the spring. My friends down at 5280 Shaolin, in April and May, I will be teaching from 1 to 4 p.m. every Saturday for all of April and May.
That's fantastic.
It's going to be a really strong introduction to Wing Chun. It's going to cover just a little bit of material, but I'm going to show you multiple ways to use it. When Sifu John starts advertising, I will put that links to that. And so, yeah, that's what we're doing. That's what's going on. And what is our topic for the day, sir?
Oh, man. You know, this is something I've been thinking about for a while. And how I want to frame it is this. So how much Chinese culture do you need in your Chinese martial art? That's a big question. It's a big topic. I think there's a lot of pieces to cover, but you know, specifically, I'm thinking around how the Chinese language affects the learning of Kung Fu. So, you know, here's my experience with it. So I've studied under a number of different teachers. Some of them were native speaking Chinese people. Mm-hmm. You know, English is a second language. I have also studied under people who spoke virtually no Chinese and didn't use Chinese terminology when they taught. And you know, I can't really, speak to the difference in the experience for myself, like sure. What I thought was more valuable. But looking back on it to a certain extent, I think that the important point for me was that there was clarity in the translation of the information to me. When there isn't clarity in terms of the terms themselves, the definitions of things, and how we're using those terms when we're practicing or learning, I find that that leads to some chaos. That's like sort of culturally, you know, we can for sure expand on this topic, and you know, bring in, you know, conceptual information, philosophical information.
Sure.
It's a big topic. But for me, you know, just in terms of the language piece, that's been kind of my experience that, you know, these teachers, if the terminology, once again, if the terminology was not translated well, if it wasn't translated correctly, it leads to confusion, especially I think in the internal martial arts, because there's so much, there's more levels of nuance. There's more levels of, and as you know, most Chinese martial arts and just in general have their own vocabulary
that they use. Specific jargon to the system.
Absolutely. And if that's not translated well, then you're going to have a problem.
Sure. You know, one of the big things that happened in Wing Chun, and of course I wasn't there. This is passed down information, but it makes sense to me, is, you know, Ip Man being from Foshan. Mm. And they have their own dialect there, and that was his first dialect. And Ip Man was very educated. You know, he spoke Cantonese, he spoke a little Mandarin, a few other different languages. But, you know, we all go back to our source language. So when he moved to Hong Kong, he was using a second or third language. And some things didn't quite get translated. Now, does that mean that, you know, Wing Chun became watered down? No. But I definitely know that different terms are used for different things. As a matter of fact, I saw our a good friend of the show, Sifu David Peterson. I watched a video of him today, and he was doing what we refer to in our lineage as gum sao, like gum under your shoe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Wang Shunlian used the term saw sao. Mm. And it's fascinating.
Is it the same technique?
It is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And but what's fascinating, too, is he's the same application that we do. Huh. And most people do not use that application.
Huh.
So I guess that debate is, too, is, okay, well, it does the name matter as long as the tactic is there and it stays? I mean, this is such a fun topic because I think it really ties into previous things that we've said and opens a whole doorway and a new perspective, a kaleidoscope, if you will, of looking at not only previous things but future things. You're talking about language and terminology. I was wondering more on the nationalistic side on, you know, and we've mentioned that before, you know, Chen Wu being – and Jing Wu, another name for it, same club, being a direct answer, you know, to the YMCA, the Boys and Girls Club, that kind of thing, making sure that, you know, the Chinese children were learning a fitness – a health-based educated system that also had Chinese culture and philosophy, not the Western culture and philosophy, to keep that, you know, nationalistic pride. And so, you know, that has to come into the equation, you know. And then I look at, you know, we're talking about how much Chinese does it have to be or Chinese culture or things like that. You know, you look at other systems that have added certain things on, add on to the nationalism. There are styles that have flat out learned the lion dance to add on to have another service, you know, especially around the Chinese community, because, you know, you're talking about weddings, opening a new business, you know, our friends from the Guiding Mountain Lion Dance Club, you know, Sam and I got to be there when a little business here in Longmont opened, and it was a big thing for that couple that opened the business.
Yeah, sure.
So, you know, it's not just money to be made for the school, but it helps pay for things for the students, et cetera, but it also, again, teaches the Chinese culture. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, does your, you know, is your Wing Chun school not authentic enough because it doesn't have a lion dance school, which most of them didn't?
Right.
You know, is it authentic enough if you don't tie in, you know, Taoist deities or maybe Buddhist deities?
Oh, sure. Right.
Like Buddhist theory and culture. Mm-hmm. Is it not authentic if it doesn't have a qigong or a neigong? Is it authentic if it's not internal? Go ahead, sir.
Well, no, I was going to say, if you go back to that religious part, which is really interesting to me, because here in the United States, like if you go to the Midwest, there are a ton of schools that are branch schools from the Taiwan Shenlong Tingshou Dao. Right. So those guys who all studied under Su Hongji at some point, and they came back to the United States, and there's a couple of different sort of branches of that school. And in the Midwest, there are a bunch of these branch schools teaching, you know, Xingyi. The thing is they're all Christians, and they're like literally the name of the guy's school is the Christian Warrior Tang Shou Dao. And, you know, if I guess to contrast that, it becomes like, okay, so to go back to what we were talking about in the very beginning, how much culture do you need? I mean, some people will make the argument that Buddhist and Taoist philosophy is an integral part of, sure, say, Chinese internal martial arts.
Sure.
And I'm sure there can be, there's a good argument for that. But these people in the Midwest with this sort of, I won't say Southern Baptist because I don't know what branch of Christianity it is, but they're pretty hardcore about it if they're saying we are Christian warriors and we're doing Xing Yi.
Sure.
Which means, you know, that they're not participating in the five elements ideas. They're not participating in a lot of the Chinese philosophical ideas because that's, yeah, you know, that's against Christianity.
Or do they keep that and just rename it?
That's not what it said on their website.
Hmm.
That's not what I've seen. Now, I'm sure that there are, you know, branches of that school that are somewhere in between that did keep some of that stuff. But, that's, you know, cool. How I know, right? How much of the philosophy, how much of the culture, how much of the language do you need to keep it, to keep it intact and to transmit it? And this is an open-ended question because I for sure don't have any answers. And I also have noticed in the last few years that there are, you know, a fair amount of people who've really done the hard work. You
sure.
Know, climbed
the learned the language, yeah, lived in the
yeah,
culture.
Climbed the mountain, as I say, you know, because I haven't done any of that. But just like you were saying, yeah, they learned the language and they got the introductions and they, you know, spent the time with the teacher and they lived there and they did the thing and they got it, you know, and now they're out in the world and they're teaching it. And you know what? Fucking bravo.
Absolutely.
Because that's a super important thing. And for them, you know, my teacher included, Marcus Brinkman, you know, and for him to like go and spend all that time and effort and money and whatever, and then come back, to the States. And I feel very fortunate that I was able to, you know, get that transmission from him, from the Yizong school. But you know, how much of it do you need? And how much of it is important? How much of it is sort of just cultural baggage? And then how much of it is like necessary? Mm. And I don't know. I don't necessarily think I'm qualified to make that call. All I have is my experience with it. But, you know, I know that there are, and here's one of the things that I've seen recently. So there are lots of teachers who are teaching online these days.
Sure. And that's right? The West influencing the East, isn't it?
Sure.
Modern technology.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And, you know, and I mean, bravo, because once again, that gives people like me who are a hobbyist, who don't have the time and inclination and whatever to learn the language and go climb the mountain and go do the thing to get access to good teachers who've really spent the time and done the thing, which is great. I'm all for that. But at the same time, there has been, you know, I don't think it's those teachers in particular, but other teachers who have mentioned that having going and having those experiences, going into the culture, you know, sort of climbing the mountain, as I was saying, is integral to learning the art, and that you can't really get a genuine transmission of the art without that. And I'm like, okay, well, obviously I'm going to be biased in terms of that particular point of view because I didn't do that. And I would like to think that I got some pretty good stuff. That may just be me. But by the same token, those teachers then turn around and come to the West, or maybe they are Western, and
a lot of them are.
And then they teach. And I'm like, okay, so are your students learning, are you teaching all your students Chinese? You're teaching them all the Chinese, all of the information? Have you organized it in a way where you are participating in regular Chinese cultural events in your school? I mean, because, right, that's the argument that they're making, is that the Chinese learned, you have doing the thing and climbing the mountain is integral to the art. I see where it can give you a leg up. I really do. That I understand. But in terms of it being integral, in terms of it being you have to do these things in order to get the art, but then turning around and then teaching in the West and then saying, I question that, because I look at it and I'm like, well, like I said, are you doing that with your students? Are you teaching them Chinese? Are they learning Chinese to learn your art? Because if they're not, there's kind of a gap there. There's kind of a problem with the thinking.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because I could see maybe those teachers being bridges. A bridge sure. from the east to the west.
And 100%.
Vice versa.
Absolutely.
And I wonder, too, if they look at themselves not so much as gatekeepers, but as bridges. Well, of course they're going to be gatekeepers because they're trying to keep the lineage and style alive, whatever it may be.
Sure.
But at some point, maybe, you know, 5 or 10 years down the road, they look at 2 or 3 students and they're like, listen, you have worked your butt off. You have the capability of doing what I've done. But now here's my question. Mm. Do you just stay with that one teacher because they're a lineage holder, or do they have to go to a Chinese teacher? Do they have to go to China? Do they have to go through the same rigmarole that the teacher went through, or can they just use that teacher as the doorway or the entrance to having that?
Right.
And then the question is, too, it's kind of a two-edged sword for the teacher, which gets real tricky. Well, is the teacher's teaching always going to be more authentic because they went to China?
Sure.
And they worked with their Chinese teacher?
Sure.
Or, you know, is it going to be less authentic for their students?
Right.
And so it just
I don't know.
It, again, it's not answering any questions. It's more like asking questions.
Yes.
And I think what we're trying to do is look at the questions that the landscape of, you know, not only the Chinese culture, Chinese Kung Fu, but even, you know, some other Chinese Kung Fu podcasts are asking,
mm-hmm.
you know,
sure.
You know, I listen to a lot of them. You listen to a lot of them. And it's interesting because this topic has been brought up at multiple places. You know, one of our last episodes, you know, we brought up the concept of, you know, and I had asked this in a thread, which is kind of the new Twitter, if you will, that doesn't exist anymore. But in a thread that I posted about 8 months ago, I had asked the question almost a year ago, I guess, more like a year ago. Will Chinese martial arts be here in 100 years?
Sure.
And I think this actually adds into that topic, because at what point is it still a Chinese martial art? Mm-hmm. If it's used, is Sanda a Chinese martial art? I mean,
it's just crickets. I'm like,
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know, man.
I don't know either. You know, it's Chinese kickboxing.
It's got elements of Chinese martial sure. arts.
Sure, but
That's like asking if, you know, like, George St. Pierre was doing karate when he was doing UFC.
Sure. Sure. And, you know, I can see
I don't know.
Like, who's the gentleman from Brazil that did do karate? Lyoto Machida.
Yeah, Machida, yeah.
So Machida did legitimate karate in the UFC. But here's the other thing, too. It was usually a reverse punch or a snap kick that he hit people with.
Sure.
I know other arts that have reverse punches. I know other arts that have snap kicks.
Did he do it from a karate stance?
That's exactly right. Yeah, a lot of them he did. But here's the other thing, too. It's the karate mindset and the tactic. And you can't see that. That's an intangible.
Sure.
So are you actually seeing the intangibles with the Chinese culture in the Chinese Kung Fu?
Good question.
I mean, they are things that are – I mean, are the robes you're wearing right?
Ooh.
You know?
Well, I mean, that, you know, that brings up the whole, I mean, do we have to cosplay? Do we have to cosplay in order sure. to participate in our Chinese martial art? Uh-huh. I don't know. I mean, I don't. That's not my jam. But, you know, that is some other people's jam. So that's what they like.
I think we should definitely come back to this topic.
I think it's a good one. But anyways, I would like to hear from people once this comes out. So, you know, hit us up on Facebook, hit us up on Instagram, and we'll be out there.
Tell us what you think.
Tell us what you think.